Welcome to the Deep Dive. We've got some really fascinating material today looking at the mathematical engines behind a lot of data analysis. We're going deep on eigenvalue decomposition, or EVD, and singular value decomposition, SVD.
Yeah, these are foundational tools. Our goal, really, is to see how they let us connect things like geometry, physics even, just handling massive data sets, how we simplify and visualize complex stuff.
Okay, so let's start with maybe a picture in our heads. Forget the heavy math for a second. A matrix. It's not just numbers in a box, right? It's doing something. It's a linear transformation.
Exactly. It's an action, a geometric one. So imagine you take a simple shape, like a perfect circle, just a unit circle, and you hit it with an invertible 2x2 matrix.
What happens? It's not a circle anymore, is it?
It gets deformed. The result is an ellipse. It might be stretched out, maybe squashed in other directions, maybe rotated.
And the shape of that ellipse, how stretched it is, how far its points get from the center, that's controlled by something specific within the matrix.
It is. It boils down to basically two key scaling factors. We often call them sigma 1 and sigma 2, sigma 1 and sigma 2 del. They dictate how much stretching or squashing happens along particular directions.
Okay, so we're breaking down this complex matrix action into simpler bits, rotation, and then scaling along these special directions.
Precisely. And that idea that you can decompose the transformation into these fundamental components, well, that leads us straight into principal component analysis. PCA.
Ah, okay. So PCA is basically about finding those special directions in our actual data, the directions where the data is stretched the most.
That's the core idea, finding the axes that capture the most variance, the most spread in your data set.
So how do we find them mathematically? That brings us to EVD, right? Eigenvalue decomposition.
Right. Now, EVD has a specific requirement. It works on square symmetric matrices. Think variance or covariance matrices. Those pop up all the time in statistics and data analysis.
Okay. Symmetric and square. And EVD is asking a question about that matrix. Kienhaler, what's the question?
It's asking, are there any special vectors, let's call them vector, that when you multiply the matrix Q by dollars, you just get the same vector back, but scaled?
So Q by E, VBB. The direction doesn't change, just the length.
Exactly. The vector dollar is an eigenvector, and that scaling factor, lambda dollar, that's the eigenvalue.
And why do we care about these? What do they tell us about the data?
Okay, here's the crucial link. If Q dollars is your variance matrix, and $5 is an eigenvector, specifically a unit eigenvector, length one, then its eigenvalue lambda is the variance of your data projected onto that direction, v-phi.
Whoa, okay. So the eigenvector dollar gives us a direction, and the eigenvalue lambda tells us how much the data spreads out in that direction.
Precisely. So naturally, the biggest eigenvalue, lambda dollar one, must correspond to the direction of the maximum spread in the data. That eigenvector, v-phi dollar, is your first principal component, the most important direction.
And it gets better, right? What about all the eigenvalues together?
Right, if you add them all up, lambda dollar plus lambda node of 2 and so on, that sum is exactly equal to the trace of the matrix dollars.
The trace being the sum of the diagonal elements. And for a variance matrix, the trace is
the total variance of the entire data set. So the eigenvalues perfectly partition how the total variance is distributed across all these special eigenvector directions. It's a complete breakdown.
That's really elegant, but you said EVD needs square symmetric matrices. Real-world data, like sales figures or sensor readings, it's usually rectangular, isn't it? Lots of observations, fewer features, maybe?
Absolutely. Most raw data matrices, let's call $1, aren't square. That's where the generalization comes in.
Yeah.
Singular value decomposition, SVD.
Okay, so SVD is the more heavy-duty version, handles any matrix dollar.
Exactly. SVD can decompose any matrix dollar, rectangular, or square into three other matrices. But the key connection back to EVD involves making other dollars suitable for EVD first.
How do we do that?
We need a square symmetric matrix related to other dollar. The standard way is to compute other transpose times dollar, so a T-eter.
Ah, right. Multiplying a matrix by its transpose always gives you a square symmetric result. But there's a catch, isn't there? Something about the data in OtherDoll first.
Crucial point, yes. Before you compute ATAA, the data matrix ATAU must be centered.
Meaning you subtract the average value from each column, each feature?
Yes. You have to remove the mean. Once the loaders are centered, then the matrix QEAA is proportional to the covariance matrix. And that's the symmetric matrix EVD loves.
Okay, so we center ATIS compute choreo equals ATAA, and then we can use EVD on Q. How does SVD relate directly?
Well, the non-zero eigenvalues, lambda at ATAA, turn out to be exactly the same as the non-zero eigenvalues of ATA.
Interesting. And the singular values?
The singular values of the original matrix dollars, usually denoted sigma, are simply the positive square roots of these shared eigenvalues, so sigma squared lambda.
Got it. And the connection to the principal components?
It turns out the eigenvectors of that variance matrix AT equals ATAA are identical to what we call the right singular vectors you get from doing SVD directly on the centered matrix dot.
Okay, so two paths to the same result. We can use EVD on the covariance matrix Kierer or SVD on the centered data matrix dollars, and either way we find those principal component directions.
Exactly. It gives us flexibility.
Yeah.
Both methods find the same fundamental structure.
Right. So now we understand the machinery.
Yeah.
Let's talk PCA in practice. We've found these components ranked by their eigenvalues. How does PCA actually reduce the data?
It's pretty straightforward, actually. Since the eigenvalues tell us how much variance each component captures, and they're ordered from largest to smallest, PCA just says, keep the first few components, the ones with the biggest eigenvalues, and discard the rest.
We're essentially throwing away the directions where the data doesn't vary much. The noise, presumably?
That's the idea. You're keeping the signal, ditching the noise, and the amount of variance you keep tells you how much information you've retained.
Let's make this concrete. The iris dataset example is pretty famous, right?
Yeah, it's a classic. Four features measured for three types of iris flowers. The total variance across all four features adds up to about 4.54.
Okay. And what happens when we run PCA? What's the top eigenvalue?
The top eigenvalue, lambda 1:1, is huge. It accounts for something like 92.5% of that total variance. Just one dimension captures almost all the spread.
Wow. 92.5% in one dimension. What about the top two?
If you take the first two principal components, their eigenvalues together account for 97.8% of the total variance.
So you go from four dimensions down to just two, and you've only lost, what, 2.2% of the variance?
Exactly. You've dramatically simplified the data while keeping almost all the structural information.
But hang on, losing 2.2%, even if it sounds small, could that mess things up? Why take that risk? Isn't keeping all the data always better?
That's a fair question. The key is what you're losing. That 2.2% is likely random noise or very minor variations that don't really help distinguish the flower species, for instance.
Ah, so it's not really useful information anyway.
Probably not. And the gain is huge. Your storage needs might drop significantly. More importantly, any algorithm you run after PCA, like classification or clustering, will run much, much faster on the 2D data than the 4D data.
And maybe even work better because you removed the noise.
Often, yes. Filtering out the noise can actually improve the accuracy of downstream tasks. So it's faster and potentially more accurate. That's the trade-off.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Fewer resources, faster computation, potentially better results, and this scales up, right? What about really high-dimensional data like images, MNIST?
MNIST is a great example. It's a data set of handwritten digits, 60,000 of them. Each image is, what, 28 by 28 pixels?
Yeah, so that's 784 dimensions for each image. That's a lot.
It is. It's a high-dimensional space. If you look at the center data matrix for MNIST, its rank is high, around 7112, so 712 non-zero eigenvalues.
But surely not all 712 are equally important.
Not even close. Just like with iris, the variance is concentrated in the first few components. Get this. The top 10 eigenvalues out of 712 account for almost 50% of the total variance.
50%, just from the top 10 dimensions out of over 700.
Yep. So you can take that 784-dimensional vector representing an image, project it down onto just those top 10 principal components.
And you've still got half the statistical essence of the image.
Roughly speaking, yes. Enough that the digit is often still visually recognizable. You can even go down to maybe three dimensions and still see clusters forming. The sources often show these projections, taking a 784D point cloud and squashing it down to 3D or even 2D space. It's remarkable how much structure remains.
That's incredible. Dropping hundreds of dimensions but keeping the core information, that's the real power of SVD and PCA for complex data.
It absolutely is. But what's also cool is that these mathematical ideas, eigenvalues and eigenvectors, they show up in totally different fields too, not just data.
Like physics, the source material mentioned vibrating springs.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine masses connected by springs, maybe arranged in a circle. You can describe the forces in motion using matrices, specifically these symmetric matrices often called QDD.
And the eigenvalues of those matrices mean something physical.
They do. They're directly related to the squares of the natural vibration frequencies of the system, like how fast the masses will oscillate back and forth. It's the Squirt lambda, involving the eigenvalue lambda.
Okay, that's a neat connection. But there was something else about those eigenvalues, how they were distributed.
Right. For large systems, like many masses in a circle, the eigenvalues don't just spread out evenly between the minimum and maximum possible values. They cluster.
They cluster where?
They tend to pile up near the very top possible eigenvalue, which is lambda 4-1 in that specific spring system, and near the bottom, eigenvalue. The middle range has far fewer eigenvalues. It follows a pattern called the arcsine distribution.
Wait, that sounds familiar. Cluster at the extremes? That's exactly what PCA does. It focuses on the components with the largest eigenvalue.
Exactly. It's a deep mathematical principle showing up in both physics and data. Complex systems often seem to concentrate their most important behavior or information at the extreme ends of the eigenvalue spectrum. The middle ground is less significant.
Fascinating. So the success of PCA isn't just a data trick. It mirrors a fundamental property seen in physical systems. What about graph theory? Networks.
Same story there. If you have a network nodes connected by edges, you can represent it with an adjacency matrix. It just says who's connected to whom. For simple, undirected graphs, A-Taylor is symmetric.
So EVD applies directly. What do the eigenvalues tell us about the network?
Well, for one thing, if you have a special kind of graph called a K-regular graph, where every single node has exactly Taylor connections.
Okay, like everyone has the same number of friends on a simple social network graph.
Right. In that case, the number Taylor itself is the top eigenvalue of the adjacency matrix Eldoran.
Mm.
The matrix algebra immediately tells you this key structural property.
That's cool. But it goes deeper, right? Something about powers of the matrix.
Yeah, this is really neat. If you square the adjacency matrix, A Taylor 2, and take its trace.
Some of the diagonal elements again?
That value, trace, A Taylor 2, is exactly twice the total number of edges in the entire graph.
Oh, and A Taylor 2 in.
Trace, A Taylor 2, gives you 6 times the number of triangles in the graph.
Okay, hold on. How does simple matrix multiplication and summing diagonals tell you how many triangles are in a potentially huge, complicated network? That seems almost magical.
It feels like it, but it falls out of the linear algebra. It just shows how powerfully these matrix operations, rooted in eigenvalues and eigenvectors, capture fundamental structure, whether it's data variance, physical vibrations, or network topology.
It's like a universal language for structure. Okay, so we have these tools, EVD and SVD, giving us the principal components. Now, how do we actually use these components to do something practical, like cluster analysis, grouping similar data points together?
Right. Cluster analysis is a very common goal after doing PCA. You've reduced the dimensions. Now you want to find groups.
Mm-hmm.
The simplest algorithm is probably K-means clustering, sometimes called nearest means.
K-means. I've heard of that. How does it work, basically?
It's iterative. It goes back and forth between two steps. First, an assignment step.
Okay, what gets assigned?
Each data point, each sample $6, gets assigned to the cluster whose current center, or mean, is closest to it in space.
Makes sense. Find your nearest average point. What's the second step?
The update step. Once all points are assigned to clusters, you recalculate the center, the mean mu yi, for each cluster based on the points that are now in it.
Ah, so the centers move, and then you repeat. Assign points to the new centers, update the centers again.
Exactly. You keep iterating assign, update until the cluster centers stop moving much, until things stabilize.
Okay, simple enough conceptually. But how does PCA help here? Why not just run K-means on the original high-dimensional data, like the 784D MEA-S data?
Well, you could, but two big problems. First, calculating distances in 784 dimensions is computationally expensive. K-means would be slow. Second, and maybe more importantly, how would you visualize the results?
Right. You can't plot 784 dimensions. You'd get your clusters, maybe, but you couldn't see if they make sense.
Precisely. But if you first use PCA to reduce MES down to, say, 2 or 3 dimensions.
Ah, then K-means runs much faster on the reduced data.
Much faster. And crucially, you can plot the results. You can make a 2D or 3D scatter plot of your data points, color them according to the cluster K-means assign them to, and visually inspect if the algorithm actually managed to separate the handwritten zeros from the ones, the twos, from the sevens, and so on.
So PCA is the key enabler for both efficiency and visualization in clustering high-dimensional data. It makes it practical.
Totally. It unlocks the ability to actually work with and understand these massive data sets in a meaningful way.
Fantastic. So wrapping this up, we started today thinking about a matrix not just as numbers, but as a geometric transformation, like stretching a circle into an ellipse.
Mm-hmm. And we found the core components, eigenvectors, singular vectors that define that transformation, that structure.
Which led us straight to powerful tools like EVD and SVD and their application in PCA. Tools that let us drastically cut down the complexity of data, like going from 4 dimensions to 2 for iris, keeping 97.8% of the variance, or hundreds of dimensions down to a handful for MNIST.
Yeah, preserving the essential information while making things manageable. And we saw this isn't just a data trick. The math reflects deeper principles seen in physics, like vibrating springs, and in network structures via graph theory.
And the really striking thing, I think, is that tendency we kept seeing, whether it's data variance or physical systems or graphs, the most important information seems to cluster around the extreme eigenvalues, the largest ones, and sometimes the smallest ones, too.
It's like the system naturally compresses its most significant features into just a few dominant modes, away from the middle ground noise.
That concentration is really profound. So here's a final thought to leave you with. If this mathematical tendency holds true, that the most critical information lies at the extremes, think about a complex system you might be interested in. Maybe it's tracking financial market movements, analyzing protein folding, or even understanding patterns in historical texts.
Yeah, what would happen if you deliberately focus your analysis only on those extreme components, the ones defined by the very largest, or maybe the very smallest, eigenvalues or singular values?
What are those few dominant factors telling you about the fundamental nature of that system? Now that you know that's where the mathematics naturally concentrates the signal, what insights could you pull from just those extremes?